Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. This is Friday, and I'm hoping everybody is getting ready for the holidays coming up, and they're not going to kind of sneak up on you. We're literally just 2 weeks away from Thanksgiving. Let me get into the quick sponsorships. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that will provide you the constitutional solution in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. And even more importantly, once we get that done, we'll get the states back into alignment with the U.S. Constitution and their own constitutions. Remember, it's all about that one C word, compliance. Say it with me, compliance. Now, I would give you the number to call in, and you're going to hear it, but it doesn't look like my phone lines are working today. And I know, so Red State Talk Radio is going through some minor transitions in the background, so it won't interfere with what you're going to get on content and getting fed and so forth as far as the daily dose of the Constitution. However, we are going to be doing some comms changes, so there may be some days where we may not have the phone service, like today. But anyway, if the phone services do come online, the number to call in would be 215-867-8255. Put it on your speed dial, so if you want to sound off, especially as we start getting more into the sessions of the state legislators as 2019 kicks off, there's going to be some good dialogue, and you're more than welcome to be a part of it. The other thing you're more than welcome to be a part of, I appreciate the fact that you're helping get the word out. I'm very appreciative of the fact that this show is growing in its audience. I don't know if and I hate to say that. It's not that I don't care if I grow. What I really care about is getting the message out. And so that growth is an indication that the message is getting out. However, what's really important is that we get traction in the state legislators, because once we get one or two state legislators to actually call for and demand the audit of their contract, because most people think, and I'm going to go on a tangent here, most people believe that the Constitution and the framers, or the founders of the Constitution, were these men that wrote it. The founders of the Constitution are stakeholders by definition. The stakeholders of the Constitution are not men. They died. What do we do when the stakeholders, does it inherit down the family line? No. In this particular case, the founders, the plank owners, those who actually are the shareholders of this contract or of this entity, that is the states. The states are a perpetual entity, just like the union is a perpetual entity. And so the founders are still alive today. The founders are the states. And so once the states or the founders, you know, finally get an understanding of their position and authority over the Constitution, I don't want to say it's going to be lights out, but it's going to be game change. Not game over, but it's going to be game change. We're getting back to the limited government that was given to us. And if people don't like it, then there is a process to changing that. And oh, by the way, that actually happens to be within the contract itself. Here is the mechanism. Everybody agreed that if we need to make a change, if for whatever reason everybody wants this change, then you just go through the amendment process and it gets ratified by 3/4 of the state. Easy. Done. Now we can move forward. That's how easy it is, but the problem is that nobody's ever followed that process since the early 1800s. So when they created the Department of Interior, they decided to go down their own path and create an unconstitutional entity within the federal government. And every entity and everything they've done since then, practically since then, has been unconstitutional. The corporations are all unconstitutional. Every single department that has been created since, even the Department of Justice, is unconstitutional. And therefore, it begs the requirement, it begs the need that the state step in, because we're being spent into oblivion. We're being literally driven off the cliff with unconstitutional government. So, as this message gets out there, to me, it really doesn't matter just, if I become the number one market share, if I become, it really doesn't. And I have told people that once we get this thing moving to a point where I don't necessarily need to be sitting here behind a microphone, I'll be somewhere else. Your validity is only good based on your premise. And so that's why when you look at organizations, they become self-licking ice cream cones. I'm not going to be a self-licking ice cream cone. The unions are self-licking ice cream cones. There may have been a really good argument to form the unions when there were literally dirt floors in the factory and all these other problems. But most of those problems have gone away. And what it has done is it's created collectivism and so forth. And I can't think of anybody being able to really provide a great academic argument of how we are better off because of unions, because it's just another finger in the pot. It's another hand in the wallet of taking wealth away from the workers. It's the same thing with organizations like the NAACP. There was a requirement for bringing awareness and the advancement of. However, once we got to a point where all of a sudden there was no such thing as really institutionalized racism or what have you, and it took a while to get there, granted. But you lose relevance. But you don't want to break up your organization. You want to maintain that. And that's the problem with every single organization. The John Birch Society, they may become completely irrelevant if government actually starts complying 100% and all public servants comply to the Constitution. How relevant is the John Birch Society or an organization like the Oath Keepers? If everybody is keeping their oath and living to the compliance, then we don't have this huge systemic problem. Those types of organizations just kind of go away, right? Well, I'm here to tell you that they don't. What happens is people create self-identity, they create self-importance, and gosh, their whole world crashes in if all of a sudden they've lost, their position in this organization. And anyway, that's why I refer to them as self-licking ice cream cones. This is not a self-licking ice cream cone moment. This is not a movement of putting ice cream into, a perpetual scooping of ice cream into my cone. This is literally just a shot of education and information and getting out and networking and connecting with people. People like yourself, people like your public servants, your representatives who represent you and helping you articulate and or if not, connecting the dots, getting those connections going so that people go, I finally get it. People are hitting the epiphany. I had a great conversation today with a former senator candidate. He didn't become senator, but he was a candidate for senator. And it was literally that point of, well, what does it take to start getting people to that epiphany moment when they go, yes, that's what we need to do. It takes a little bit of time and education, but what it really takes first off is somebody to actually put aside their biases and how they view the Constitution, how they view our government, and literally get them to step back and look at how the framers created our Constitution and how they created our republic and what they did in doing that, what powers were delegated, what powers were retained by the states. And so in doing that, then it becomes very, very clear. That's why I read these documents. That's why I live behind these things, because they are telling us the truth. They didn't have any machinations of 200 years down the road, some son of a son of a son of a son of a son is going to literally son of a gun, get these powers and be able to, fool us all and sell us downriver. No, that was a lot of work by evil people with machinations in trying to obtain power and to control us. And that's literally how we got there. But back to this long way around the woodshed of, not necessarily woodshed, but this long trip I'm taking in getting getting support. I would love it if you would send me an email if you're interested. I'm overwhelmed with getting things done myself and trying to get out and get the word out, which is a good thing. But I could really use people. If you want to help, then by send me an email and I will, you know, figure out where you live, what county, what state, and start at the ground level, move you forward and help you lead. Because this is not about some political savvy run that I want to make. Absolutely not. This is all about saving our liberty, saving our Constitution, and saving our republic. I believe that right there, everybody resonates with, and I believe that right there is what everybody has been looking for, that they've been missing in this, what I call the Great Awakening, since the third Great Awakening that really started under the Clintons. Thank you, Clintons and Bushes, for introducing us to the globalist efforts and the New World Order. And in doing all of that, it kind of helped wake us up to realize, but because now we have access. We have access to the actual documents. Never before did the people in, you know, California, Hawaii, and all the other states in the Republic have access to the ratification debates, to all of these documents that clearly articulate what the system was that they created and what we need to do, or I should say, they don't tell us that, but they do tell us what was created and how it's supposed to operate, so we can recognize the perversion from that. And I talk a lot about that regarding reading the scriptures and why we need to read the scriptures and our founding documents, because we can identify the perversions in doing that. So with that, I'm in hard break. I will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And with that, I was doing a kind of a roundabout groveling. If you are looking to have any type of opportunity or access in being involved in a very historic shift in our government, by all means, send me an email. Another mechanism of doing that, as you know, is the constitutionclub.ning.com. Happy to send you that way. Go check it out. They have states and counties. You can drill right down and you can start setting up your own little teams and groups And like I said, I still need to get Keith Borders, you know, time to sit down and actually engage in real dialogue of what he's going to do, because he just recently moved, and so he's still trying to get a lot of things kind of in a line. So hopefully we'll have that very soon. I can get that time so we can kind of have this meeting and present to you these concepts of what you can do and how you can actually lead within your group by using Constitution Club instead of being out in the public space. Because, you know, it's one thing to, you know, talk about out to dinner with your sweetheart and, you know, doing social things with social media. But when it comes down to some of this business, I think that there's a greater merit, especially as the threat, as we're going to talk about today, the threat that's really coming to those who are trying to get engaged for the good of our Constitution and our Republic. Because it's real. These folks, as I've been telling you, are wired differently, and the ends justify the means. And so, or the means justify the ends. Anyway, email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And so as I've looked out my window, and even though it's kind of snowing still, and I see no sign in the news or outside that there's any hope that the federal government will repeal and rescind its insertion and usurpation of the state's roles, responsibilities, and powers, that means we have to do this. We absolutely have the obligation for our posterity to preserve liberty. And that's why we have to get engaged. You have to get out there. You have to start doing something. Remember, there's that difficult conversation around the corner coming up with your kids, your grandchildren, or whomever to say, why didn't you do something? You had this opportunity. Now, next week, a week from today, Friday, November 16th, I will be giving you a constitutional look at our Republic's first Thanksgiving. Why am I doing it next Friday? Because there's a lot of things that happen, and there's a good chance that you may miss it. So I'm going to post it as the podcast that weekend. So by Monday, you'll be able to come and download that if you've missed it and give you a different perspective. I hope and pray that what I recommend and what I ask you to consider, you actually end up doing on Thanksgiving Day. That it becomes a part of your tradition so that you can begin to teach your children the true Republican form of government, the true American Thanksgiving message, and what we're supposed to be doing as a nation. And in doing that, we might actually be able to start educating our way out of this communist indoctrination process that we've all been in the grips and throes of. So, let me move on, because I know there's lots of people that are just chomping and bothered, because I remember this happened in the 80s, or not the 80s, in 2000 with Gore and Bush in the presidential election. And surprise, it's Florida again. Actually, it's not just Florida. It's Arizona. It's Washington State was instrumental in this. And so there's a reason why the Dems go to court quickly to fight over elections. And there's a reason why it's always the Democrats in these stronghold Democratic districts that happen to find a whole pot of ballots. Do you think that's just a coincidence? How come that never comes out of these really strongholds, bastions of conservative Republicans? Why is it that it is always the cesspools where the Democrats try to get away with everything they possibly can? Yeah, I said cesspools. It has to become the reality. It's the elephant in the room. We need to start addressing that we are dealing with election fraud and voter fraud. And it also basically is the reality that they're going to live on the low road, and they're going to do anything they can to steal elections. Because why? The ends justify the means. And so they will do anything they need necessary to get to their ends. And so the ends justify the means. It doesn't matter if it's a crime. It's not really a crime to them. And that's why you find that Obama and a lot of these corrupt leaders will constantly basically commute the sentences of really bad criminals because in their eyes, they're really not that bad. And so what needs to happen when these elections go down? There needs to be a law. Congress actually needs, because Congress does have the constitutional responsibility over federal elections of senators and so forth, that they're supposed to appoint the time and so forth. They actually can dictate that at the end of the election ballots, when, in other words, when the precincts and ballot time closes, that any box, any ballot that is not in the custody and is in the chain of custody that is required for the voting for that day, any box that comes up in that district, it needs to be swarmed by federal election commissions to determine where that box came from, who had their hands on it, and how come it was suppressed for this last minute. Because bottom line, this is what's happening. As I've been telling people how voter fraud works, they don't get the ballots. They know that there's all this potential of voter fraud. So when do they print the ballots? When do the ballots actually come out? That doesn't come out right after the primary. They hold on to them and they wait, and there's only a guessing game as to what the ballot is going to look like and how it's going to be printed very specifically. So they do that to keep people from being able to wholesale cheat or create a whole bunch of bad ballots, right? What I mean by is false ballots. And that's why, you know, it takes time. How long does it take for you to, if you do a mail-in ballot, how long does that take for you to fill out? It's not a minute. It's a couple of minutes. It's about 10, 15 minutes, especially because you have to color in the lines. It's not like in the Florida where you punch a little spot here, punch a little spot there. And the nice thing about some of those difficulties with the hanging chads and all of that, those types of balloting processes require that you actually have to have the template as well as those little punch cards to line up so that you can, you know, poke appropriately, because on the card itself, you don't know what that is. So there's been a lot of efforts in trying to thwart this, but bottom line, when you have these printed ballots, especially these mail-in ballots, it's just a matter of going down and getting Xerox copies with the same paper and then literally creating a whole bunch of copies and then having a little army in a garage or down in some basement. Everybody's filling them out. Everybody's filling them out. And so they go, okay, we'll hold on to this and we'll try to inject these on Wednesday morning, because they'll try to do as much as they can and get it in just a little late. Come on. Are we that stupid? Are we that dumb to really believe that that box was really a part of the you know, the individual election process? So what has to happen is there has to be a thorough investigation, like I said. And as a matter of fact, there has to be a thorough audit as well. In other words, you have to define what ballot that was and who voted, because you don't want to make sure, you want to make sure that people aren't duplicating their ballots. So there needs to be a process. And if it's not already done so, Congress needs to make it a law that the individual's name, address, and that type of information is on each ballot that is being processed, so that at any point in time, because what the left loves doing is, oh, it's got to be secrecy and all this crap. What the left loves to do is they try to make sure it's really important because you have a constitutional right of a secret ballot. BS. Show me that in the Constitution. Furthermore, by putting the names on there, then you have the ability to go back to your auditor and say, show me my ballot and show me how you counted it. Because if they're not counting it right, then it goes down to that Stalin little adage that says, I don't care how the people vote. I just care I just care that we control those people that count the votes. Let people think that they're voting for whatever it is they want, but we will count the votes and get the outcome we want. And that's exactly what the Democrats are doing. Come on, let's call it for what it is. This is voter fraud. This is election fraud as well. And election fraud is when you have electioneers and people that are involved in the process that are doing what they can to basically move the outcome in a very specific direction. There are people that are filling those ballots out falsely, which are, you know, false ballots or violating voter laws. That's voter fraud. Election fraud is where they're deliberately counting and or injecting illegal ballots into the system and so forth. So anyway, this all needs to change. Congress really needs to step in. And unfortunately, we get another Democrat Congress coming up. Unless the outgoing Congress, you know, gets the cojones and actually does the right thing and says that they're going to dictate these types of things. But I doubt that they will, because we still don't have that kind of, help me out, that kind of power, control, and, you know, conservatives in Congress. There's just not enough to have the political will to want to solve this problem. And that's why we can constantly sit on the edge of our seats for a week or two after the election, or a month. Anyway, with that, I'm at a hard break. I will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And I know I talked about this yesterday, but I find too many times in my life I say something, and the next thing you know, the irony is something happens. And so I didn't will any ill upon Ruth Bader Ginsburg. However, it seems like she fell and broke a few ribs. And it's interesting that she just broke ribs and not a hip. But at 85, I do know that that is the beginning. You know, when you start breaking bones, that becomes real problematic. And there's not much that they can do, especially as your bones get older. They just become more and more fragile and so forth. And I remember when my father passed, his bones were breaking and so forth as his body was decaying from cancer. And it's pretty sad. But, I mean, that is life as it slowly extinguishes from our physical bodies that we have. But anyway, I know there's a lot of talk, and there has been a little bit of buzz regarding her breaking her ribs. And the point was, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I mentioned that there was another justice. His name is Breyer. Stephen Breyer was actually the other justice that was appointed by Clinton. Breyer and Ginsburg, hardcore leftist communists, and tried to do anything and everything they can to avoid the true constitutional perspective. That's what they're supposed to be doing. And so anyway, both of them in their 80s, and I'm going to point out the fact that any man that's living in his 80s has already crossed that threshold of life expectancy for an American male. I think it's still like in the mid, maybe upper 70s now, but I don't think it's 80 yet. So anyway, in looking at the justices, though, and as I perceive what they, you know, their role in everything, especially when it comes to Republic Review, I have to tell you that when I look at who Justice Bush Senior gave us, which was Clarence Thomas, I can tell you that we dodged a bullet. We completely dodged a bullet. I don't think Bush understood just how constitutionally grounded Clarence Thomas was, that he's really come out. He may not be the Scalia in leading thought and those types of things, but I love Clarence Thomas. I think he's a great man. I'd love to meet the man someday. He's in my bucket list of a person I would really like to meet. But I believe you got to put this in context. So let me kind of frame this for you, because Bush Sr. was the man that introduced the Agenda 21 issue and got America engrossed in signing an unconstitutional treaty. Anybody listening to Red State Talk Radio who's heard of Paul Preston, or anybody that has heard Tom DeWeese on my show, or any of these other experts that are trying to tell you about Agenda 21, 2030, and so forth. And as a matter of fact, Glenn Beck and a lot of other conservative entertainers are telling you about this huge, insidious, unconstitutional international threat that is operating here within America. It's operating within your home county currently. They're trying to take away your water rights. They're trying to take away your property rights. They're trying to take away your individual liberty and sovereignty. And so this president that was introducing and actually kind of, you know, cutting the ribbon on the New World Order as America started embracing it because he decided to step on the Constitution, I am going to tell you that we really dodged a bullet in that Supreme Court appointment. I can't tell you that Bush Jr. helped us much. I don't think that Roberts and Alito, who he appointed during his presidency, were... how do you say, stellar constitutional leaders? I mean, if you look at how Roberts sidestepped the Obamacare issue. And it's not that these guys are bad. It's not that they really hurt us, but they didn't help us. They're not originalists that actually say, you know, the federal government has no jurisdiction on this. I mean, I believe Anthony Scalia was literally moving and getting into that position to be able to actually argue those types of things. And the reason being is, like I said, the access to all of these documents and all of these information has always been limited. And even in the best legal schools, as I've spoken to lawyers who have, you know, not only degrees, but years and years of experience, they knew very little about the real founding documents, the ratification debates of the Constitution. They've never read them. As a matter of fact, I'm going to challenge you. Try to take time for the rest of the year and make note. Ask somebody, have you read the ratification debates? You will find that you probably won't find anybody. And if you do, it will be a surprise to me, because very few people that I have met, other than the constitutional scholars that I've worked with, have ever read or even understand what the ratification debates are and what they mean to our Constitution. And so the real problem with the fact that we have this huge pool of lawyers and judges out there is the fact that their paradigm is based on the perversion of our Constitution, or fundamentally, the compact, the Constitution itself. There is nothing within the Constitution that ever gave allowance for the court system, the federal court system, to inject case law. There is no allowance within the Constitution to allow the federal court system to even utilize precedents. It's either in the contract or not. The whole concept of constitutional law is a fallacy. It is what helps protect the league or the boys club who practice law to basically say, well, you kind of have to be a constitutional law, you know, lawyer to be able to talk about these. No. As a matter of fact, the framers were pretty clear. They tried to write and create a system of self-governance that we, the people, could be able to read, access, that they didn't create this barrier. Madison was a huge advocate of making the common man a representative and a governor, or I should say, one that is involved in government. The other thing, and I've even proven this, that there was Massachusetts and Virginia that kind of pointed to the fact that the Constitution doesn't even dictate the form of law that the states are supposed to exercise. It is up to the discretion of the states whether they wanted to implement common law, which was the British practice, or whether they wanted to invoke and utilize civil law, which is the only state that uses civil law is Louisiana. And those of you who've listened to the show, you know that. It is the only state in the Union that does not use common law. And the origins of common law, again, like I said, is the Anglo-Saxon. It is the British foundation of law and government. Civil law goes back to the ancient Rome society, and it was brought in via France. France uses civil law. And so, just so you understand this, the Constitution did not determine what states were supposed to use or what not to use, nor did it determine that it was to use for the Constitution and dictate that it was using common law, which, you know, allows cases to move forward based on precedents and so forth. The Constitution did not embrace any law. As a matter of fact, when I ask people, in the Constitution, where does it identify that it creates law? Well, it says that if it does something, it is the supreme law of the land, and that is absolutely correct. But it did not create a law system like constitutional law. Everybody that has a contract, if you've got a contract with your labor agreement, if you have a contract with your phone provider, have you ever heard of Verizon law? Have you ever heard of Ford financing law? No. Contracts do not beget law. Contracts are contracts. It's either in the contract or it's not in the contract. It's either something that is enumerated and empowered by that contract that you do, or it's not. And so that's where, you know, the lawyers had done a very, very good job in literally obscuring everything. And that's why I think it's really important, as I've started to go through, and I was mentioning today, that as I was going through these Federalist Papers and everything else, and when I ever read Hamilton, because I understood Hamilton as a bad actor, and I don't mean in Broadway, the Broadway show Hamilton, I mean the man Hamilton. Hamilton was not a good person because he had a lot of problems. And if you start really looking and understanding his life, his origins, how he had to live, and the prejudices, here's a guy that overcame a lot to get to the position he got, and he didn't do it necessarily on the high road. He did a lot of things, you know, for Washington and others on the high road, but he used that in obtaining trusts and so forth so that he could do other things. And so I'm going to get into a Hamilton quote from the Federalist Papers, and I'm going to point out some irony, but I'm just letting you know that I'm literally, look, I got 5 seconds here to go into this hard break. And so I want you to understand that it is an ironic turn of events that the left is embracing Hamilton in, you know, the Hamilton Broadway show and all of those types of things. And I believe that there's a reason why, because they know he was a leader in undermining the Constitution. I'll get to that when we come right back. So please stay tuned. I'll be right back after this. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Now, one of the things that I noticed as I started reading some of the statements and articles and so forth that Madison had written and that Hamilton had written, and as I started looking at the behavior afterwards of both of these men, as well as John Jay and some of the other framers, it became heir apparent that Madison was a man of impeccable integrity. What he said, he did, and, you know, he walked the walk. Hamilton was constantly in flux and changing. And as a matter of fact, I believe that he played his hand by a sleight of hand when he was writing and talking in the Federalist Papers and some of his work. And a great example of that is Federalist Paper number 81, when he talks about the judiciary encroaching upon the legislative. And he basically says this. I'm just going to read a short passage. But before I read this passage, I want you to understand that most of everything that we read, and I always ask this question, are these the words of deceit? I truly believe that some of these things that I'm reading of Hamilton were words of deceit, because he set these things up to get people to look away from them. And then as soon as the government was formed, he started using these very precise things to exploit and to basically take advantage. And so he says in Federalist Paper number 81, he says, "It may be the last place be observed that the supposed danger of jurisdiction or the judiciary encroachments on the legislative authority, which has been upon many occasions reiterated, is in reality a phantom." He's basically saying that that's a phantom. There can be no way that the judiciary can actually encroach upon the legislative body. And then he goes off onto this really weird tangent about it can't be proven mathematically. And I'm going, you know, really? Did he actually win these types of arguments? Because as I started looking at them more and more, I go, he's really not providing any substance. he actually sounds like a progressive today that basically rebuffs, you know, but doesn't provide any real substantial retort or response to providing evidence. He just basically says, you can't mathematically prove that, and just kind of meanders on. The more important thing is that one of his proteges, John Marshall, and if you listen to the show, you know that, John Marshall actually played his hand to the T, and there's no doubt what he says here in the ratification debates is very clear. He says, Mr. Chairman, these, sir, are the points of federal jurisdiction to which he, and he's readdressing one of the anti-federalists in the ratification debates, and he says, with a few exceptions, let us examine each of them with the supposition that the same impartiality will be observed there as in other courts, and then see if any mischief will result from them. With respect to the cognizance in all cases arising under this Constitution and the laws of the United States, he says that the laws of the United States being paramount to the laws of the particular states, there is no case but what that is extended to. So now he goes on to, because this argument by the anti-federalists is saying that, hey, you know, the federal government is supreme in all things, and they're going to penetrate into all cases and all types of law. And so he goes on and says, has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? That's a question. And it goes on to, does he understand it so? He's talking about the gentleman, the anti-federalist. And he says, can the U.S. government make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens in the same state? Those were common things that were legal problems within the states at that time. And then he says, can the federal government, the United States government, go beyond the delegated powers in the Constitution? No, they can't. And so what he says is, if they were to make a law not warranted by any of the by the powers enumerated, like health care, like education, like energy, like housing and urban development, those types of laws, right? It would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. They would declare it void. Does that make sense? It's pretty clear that when it comes to our court and when it comes to our legal system, the federal government was limited in its jurisdiction. And so why is this really important? Because I know I harp on this, and it was brought up today that there's a possibility as the states start marching forward in reclaiming the republic and calling for this audit that New York or California may send a team of lawyers to the Supreme Court and say, hey, they can't do this. There's nothing in the Constitution that gives them the power to do this. And it'll come down to this, my friends, jurisdiction. The federal government has no jurisdiction over anything that is not enumerated. And so when we start reclaiming the republic with republic review, we're literally challenging the federal government's not just its legal jurisdiction, but its assertion that it can exercise roles, responsibilities, and powers that have not been delegated to it, that it is completely and entirely outside its operational jurisdiction. Does that make sense? I know it does. And so what Republic Review will be doing, and so as soon as the states try to start suing, the quick retort for the Supreme Court is really going to be very clear. It is going to be very concise and clear because the attorney generals of the states that are going to be literally auditing the Constitution will say, sorry, Supreme Court, but you have no jurisdiction over these things. And the Supreme Court would go, well, these are federal issues. And I go, but yeah, they're only federal issues by usurpation. They are not federal issues within the jurisdiction of the federal government. And that one law, that one word right there, courts are duty bound to prove jurisdiction. and they won't be able to prove jurisdiction. The Supreme Court will have its hands tied, and you will literally, as soon as the blue states recognize that they don't have a way to stop this, then they will start trying to do other things. But this all goes down to why we see the left and these idiots, these communists, literally trying to utilize and finagle the system in obtaining some kinds of outcomes that they couldn't earn otherwise. That's why they cheat. That's why they're hardwired that way. The ends justify the means. That's purely what it does. So the other thing I wanted to point out, because if you hadn't heard, and I really feel sorry for Tucker, and I feel sorry for all of these people that are getting doxxed. If you haven't heard of the term doxing or doxed, what it means is it's just like doxing is just like name dropping. But instead of name dropping, it is document dropping. Dox for document. And it is literally happening to a lot. Ann Coulter, I believe, Tucker Carlson, there's a few other people that are getting publicly searched on the internet. And this information is being published, you know, that is literally private information, but somehow you can find it out there. And those documents are being dropped out on the internet in public view so that those people can be harmed, because the intent is malice. There is a malicious intent in trying to let Antifa and let all the bad players out there know, hey, this is where this is, Tucker Carlson lives. And so Tucker Carlson has literally had threats knock on his front door from Antifa and so forth. And we're in that type of society. I am telling you, the wiring of these people is hard. They do not care about you thinking differently. I've told you this. When they tell you that we'll have to agree to disagree, then what they're telling you is, I'm just buying myself time until I can figure out how to destroy you or defeat you. Either way, I don't want you or need you. We will move on without you, because they don't care if you're dead or if they kill you. If they could get away with killing, then they would. And, you know, there's a couple of, I will call them partners, if you want to call them the Clinton Crime Syndicate. There's a reason why, if you actually Google body count, you'll find Clinton's name quickly come up in Google and in DuckDuckGo. The ends, again, justify the means. And if you look at the hostility that we're dealing with as a nation from the White House press corps, and how they're literally, their hostility and how they're treating the president and how they're treating anybody towards a constitutional and or a conservative position. I mean, if you haven't understood this one premise, we are in a civil war. And by definition, a civil war is a war fighting for control. It is one side fighting for control of the other. Here's the problem. There is only one side in this war that is actually engaged in tactics of warfare. That is the left. That is the subjugationists. That's the communists. That's those people who want to enslave us and the world. They're the only ones that are functioning as warriors and operating as warriors against us. So it's time we start waking up, and it's time we start taking them to the woodshed and using the Constitution as our weapon and as our shield. My friends, I'm out of time. This is Reclaiming the Republic. I am Reclaiming the Republic, and I am G.R. Mobley. I will be back on Monday. God bless. Have a great weekend. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.